WWE superstar Dolph Ziggler here, obviously, and you are listening to This Is Wrestling, the podcast. And we welcome you to WrestleMania week. This is wrestling. It is Lever Sage, your main host of the show. Welcomed by Tanner Ryle. Tanner, great to have you along. WrestleMania week means we bring the big stars. So Tanner, it's great to have you on the program.
Great to be here. Big week. It feels like Christmas for us wrestling fans this time of year, doesn't it?
I don't know. Does it? Oh, Zach. Forgot you're here. Zach McGibbon. Yeah.
That's right.
How are you, Zach?
I'm doing pretty good, Lee.
Did I not introduce you first?
I think that may have been an omission.
The guy who carried 174 straight episodes and I didn't introduce you second? Did you tell me this is episode number 175 and did you or did you not off of the air say that you had carried each and every program so far?
I
don't care what you think, Zach. Because this is WrestleMania week. Maybe The Rock's going to be there. That's my prediction 2 years ago. Spoiler alert, he's not going to be. Great, Zach McGibbon, Tanner Ryle. Very, very excited to get into WrestleMania week and everything that it brings. We're not going to only have this episode, but we'll have another episode with our official WrestleMania predictions. But Tanner's along. We'll talk some C4. We'll talk some AEW. But, of course, it is WrestleMania week, and as you said, Tanner, it's like Christmas. Zach, how are you? I'm excited that you got moved to a weekend coming up on. It's nice that in Belleville, they put you up to primetime this coming weekend for WrestleMania weekend.
That's right. Yeah,
nice that you get to work.
Yes, exactly. I've got the Friday off, so that's nice. But so expect maybe an episode then. Who knows? We'll see. But I've been moved up, if you want to call it that, to the weekend. The person that usually works the weekend is on vacation this weekend. So that's where I'll be. Saturday morning, you'll hear me reading the news in Belleville.
But will we, Tanner? I'm not sure that you and I on a Saturday morning be our first instinct, but now we might. It's also really nice to know that, you know, you're being moved up. The Kingston Frontenacs are now out.
Yes.
And in the OHL draft lottery, I'm trying to figure out, Tanner, how many teams we have possibly to go to the Memorial Cup in this year. Oh, two of them. Right. The Gatineau Olympic and the Ottawa 67, Zach. And now your first year covering the Ontario Hockey League and you're covering a team that couldn't make an 8-team playoff in a 10-team division. That's, you know what? That's congratulations.
Oh, you're fired up today. I love it.
Always fired up, Zach. You told me I haven't carried one of the 174 first episodes. I better do something here.
got you fired up. You know it's all in jest. It's all in good fun.
It's all in good fun. The Frontenacs are in the lottery, and the 67th and the Gatineau Olympique are going to play at the same Slush Puppy Center for the first week. Do you know why, Zach?
Why?
Do you know why, Tanner?
Why?
It sounds like no from each of you. Because you're talking to right now the guy who's going to cover, as our old friend Billy Red Lions used to say, from pillar to post, the World Men's Curling Championships live at TD Place, April 1st through 9th. Get your Brad Gushue tickets here. Zach, who's the best curler in the world?
If it's not Brad Gushue, I don't know who is.
Do you know, Tanner?
Chris Jericho.
Yes. See, that's why Tanner's on this program. See, Zach? Just try. Like, right. Tanner threw out a guess. Okay? Now, it happens to be 7-time world champion, 3-straight-time world champion, gold, silver, and bronze at the Olympics, Nicholas Eden out of Sweden. But nobody knows that because we think curling doesn't exist outside of Canada. Guess what? It does, Zach. And outside of Belleville, too. Okay? You got your car running, Zach? It's good?
Car is all good. Car is all good.
All right, Tanner, we were really in jeopardy. Did you, How's everyone doing for Forbidden Door?
I'm going. I don't know if you're going, Tanner.
It's looking like a no, just based off of ticket prices and getting to Toronto. I've already got a vacation booked for the end of May, so it was kind of unfortunate timing with the show.
We'll try and get Tanner a cheap ticket, Zach, okay?
Yeah. With We're going to get you there.
A guy in, with your connections with Forbidden Door coming. Also got tickets. I know there are some people excited. Postman Yan was excited. He and his girlfriend talking about going to Forbidden Door. Very exciting AEW. We're already working on like accommodations and meetup sites and everything else. Zach will let you know where it's going to be. Tanner, I'm not going to tell him the right spot. So, well, the rest of us will meet somewhere. Zach will meet somewhere else.
Thinking in the middle of Oshawa or something.
Oh, the team that is in the playoffs against the 67. Zach, the Oshawa Generals that beat out Kingston. Yeah, maybe it will be in Oshawa. Let's get to WrestleMania week. We got C4 to cover. We got a lot of AEW news on WrestleMania week, which is pretty. I mean, the CM Punk news. Just excited to talk to you guys about it. And I don't know if I was happier or more upset with the fact that Vikingo and Kenny Omega was this incredible dream match, and to me lived up to a lot of what I thought was hype, but there was actually no hype going into the week. Don't know how they spoiled that, but they did. But it was an incredible match to talk about. So we got a lot to do. So Tanner, is Cody Rhodes going to win the world title coming up?
I'm going with yes. I think it's time. I really do. I think Roman's going to take some time off. I think they've been building to this for so long. It's time to pull the trigger. It's time for something new in the WWE. And I think Cody Rhodes is the only credible person left for Roman to drop the titles to at this point.
Zach, the buildup, I can tell you I'm a little underwhelmed at the buildup from Cody Rhodes to Roman Reigns. I think they've done some bad promos. I actually think they had a pretty good promo session last week, but I'm a little bit underwhelmed at kind of the build towards the main event at WrestleMania. What do you think about Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns and the buildup?
Yeah, in terms of the build, I think it started off a little bit awkward. They were trying to incorporate Dusty, and it just didn't really work. In the next couple of weeks after that, it started to become more about how this is Cody's dream. This is what Cody needs to do. They've put the focus back on a Cody. And I think with that sort of centralized focus, it's kind of got this feud back on track. I think this has been all right. I think it's been solid, actually. What could have been, you know, I don't want to be that guy that continues to harp on, you know, what could have been with Sami Zayn and trying to do one night of Sami versus Roman and the other night is Cody versus Roman. But what we've got here so far, I still think we've got a hot babyface going in. And, you know, Tanner, you predicted that Cody would win. I think there's still a little bit of unpredictability with it. So it's the build itself, I think, has gotten better over the last couple of weeks. I think depending on how, you know, it is on Raw and SmackDown this week, we'll kind of see what the final nail is on this feud. But I do agree with you. It had some awkwardness at the start. It didn't really seem the centralized theme of the feud just did not seem to really mesh well with these two characters. But once they started to flesh it out a little bit more and make it a little bit more personal between both Roman and Cody, I think it's gotten better since then. I think it's been a solid build.
The idea of Cody Rhodes being your like complete babyface world champion, do you like that idea for a while, Tanner? Is that something that you feel like can do good business in the WWE? Or the idea, like, there's been lots of tweeners and there's been pure heels, but it's much easier sometimes for the babyface to chase and the heel to, you know, be the champion. I think we see that in a lot of different places over the course of time. To have the baby face as your world champion for a long time, do you think that's a good idea? And do you think that's where they're going with Cody?
To me, I think it's really going to depend on what they could have lined up for him afterwards. Because like you said, the chase is always better than the run when it comes to babyface champions. I always think back to Hangman Adam Page and just how hot he was winning the title from Omega and then just how kind of mediocre his run was. I'm really interested to see how they do it with Cody. We've never seen him as the top world champion in a promotion. I'm sure we've seen him with the Ring of Honor title, but Ring of Honor was not exactly the WWE or AEW are right now. We saw him with the IWGP US title as a heel, even to further the point there. But I think if anyone can do it, I think it's Cody. And just the fact that we've had a heel champion for so long in the WWE, going on almost 3 years now, I think it's something fresh. It's something new. If they give him the right opponents, there's still so many people at the top of the WWE that came up over the last couple of years that he hasn't had the opportunity to work with, that if they pair him with the right opponents, I don't see how it doesn't go well.
Back to further the discussion on the babyface stuff, to have a pure babyface as your champion for a long period of time, it seems like sometimes that doesn't work. Like I know we had Hogan, a lot of people over the course, but the fact that wrestling has changed so much over the last, you know, 20, even 10 years, do you think that that can work in this day and age? Like a pure baby face being your world champion for what we would consider a longer period of time?
Yeah, I mean, I think it can work. As depends on how you push the other main event guys are around him. So in the case of Cody, like if you continue to push some other heels, you know, we've heard that potentially Gunther is a future opponent for Cody for the world title. You know, if they're able to build up some more heels, you could have a pretty lengthy babyface run. I think when you mentioned Hogan, in the case of like Hogan defending the title, it was unique. Well, I wouldn't say unique, but it was like to the mainstream, you got all these, you know, big dudes like your King Kong Bundys, your Big John Studs, Andre the Giant, obviously, famously. And that was just a formula that worked. It's these big dudes that seem, how can Hulk Hogan overcome the odds? And people kind of bought into it at that time. Storytelling like that now would just not work because obviously wrestling has evolved and it's not as simple as it used to be when it comes to the storytelling. So I think to have an effective babyface, you've got to be able to put together a good story behind it. It's one that can get the crowd invested in him and just kind of following along with the story. I think we could have had that with Hangman. I agree with Tanner. I think the matches were good in that, but in terms of the actual story, it could have been a little bit stronger. So because Hangman at that time, when he had the title, he had a pretty strong roster around him where you could build some credible heels to kind of go after that title. And then obviously we saw what happened with the CM Punk stuff at the end there. So it's possible. It's how you push the people around you. And that's kind of been a problem with WWE and why, you know, we kind of bang the desk so much on, you can't just have everything focus on this one guy because you got to build something around him. Like Steve Austin, you know, was the top guy during the Attitude Era, but he also had, you know, a heel Rock who was just coming up, Triple H. Later on, you could do a Chris Jericho. Mick Foley was a dynamic enough performer where you could have him in the main event and headline a pay-per-view. And so Undertaker as well. And so in the case of the WWE, you kind of look at Cody and you kind of see the heel opponents that they have. And, you know, Gunther could certainly work. Maybe they do another rematch with Roman, but,
and I don't want to cut you off, but so Gunther to me is the perfect example of what would not work. Mm-hmm. I would be, well, first of all, if I got a Cody Gunther match and they built Gunther up, I think a lot of us would be in. Like, I don't want to speak for you guys. You guys can say your opinions, but Gunther is an amazing athlete to watch.
Yeah.
How many people watch Gunther and actually dislike him? Actually think, oh, okay, I know he's playing a heel, but man, I hate that guy. How many people think that of him?
Very few, if any.
Right. So while I would love to see a Gunther Cody Rhodes match, I don't know that you're going to be able to do anything with Gunther to put him into this place of like this dastardly heel. He's a heel, but he's not really a heel because so many people appreciate what he does. And so yes, I'd like to see Cody and Gunther, but I don't. I guess I'm wondering about the long-term viability of a true babyface going up against heels that you actually believe are going to win and beat him. And he is, because a true babyface as your world champion for a long time, does have to overcome a lot of obstacles. And the Hangman Page one, the example, I think is a really good example of, like, they were close. They did some really good things. I wanted to cheer for Hangman. I wanted him to overcome some of what had happened to him to remain the world champion. But it's like they almost got there, but then they just missed it. And I think if they had left him there for a longer period of time, they might have been able to fix it, but they went away from it. And so I'll ask you guys, what do you think is, who's the best babyface world champ, like true babyface world champion in the last 10 or 20 years? Because John Cena is a really divisive topic, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and he always has been. So has there been a long-standing world champion that's been a true babyface?
Yeah, I mean, that was going to be the name, and I knew that would be divisive, would be John Cena. There was potential in Daniel Bryan, but obviously he got hurt. It's tough, yep, kind of thinking back to some of the different babyface champions that they've had. I can't really think of one in the last 20 years.
But in any company, like in AEW, and so like long standing world champions.
Yeah.
So can it work, Tanner? Like, I worry about Cody being in the position to beat Roman, and then it feels like he's going to be, like, without giving away spoilers, because we'll do another episode about all of our predictions. But this topic to me is really interesting, because I think they're going to try and go back to this model that they had of Dusty Rhodes, of the working man's champion, and being out there like Cena had with the US title when everyone was coming to challenge him. It was actually the most interesting John Cena's been in a long time, right? Like, to go out there and to face all of these challengers and to be on TV every week and everything that Roman wasn't and Brock wasn't and these like bigger champions weren't. I think they're going to go back to this. I'm really worried about how it's going to go.
I'd be interested to see it, because we did see that to an extent with Cody in AEW, although that was with the TNT championship. And I thought that reign was managed quite well, if I'm being honest.
Mm-hmm.
When you had the guys like the Mark Quens and bringing in the new people like the War Horses and the Eddie Kingstons and the Ricky Starks to face him for the TNT title. Obviously, yep, I don't think we're going to be picking up our weekly indie wrestler for Cody Rhodes to face for the world championship on Monday Night Raw. But to have him go out there and face off with, I don't know, like Chad Gable in the main event of Raw for 1 week. And then the next week, maybe we get a Mustafa Ali. But it, as long as it builds up to like a proper match of a babyface and a heel in the end, I think it could work to an extent. And then maybe it is the story of Cody Rhodes trying to be what Brock and Roman weren't, and then working himself too hard and maybe even going to the dark side in the end.
Great minds think alike, Zach, because that's exactly what I was going to say about how long do we think that he remains this baby face. I know we're talking like way further down the road, but I completely agree with Tanner. It feels like he's going to win the title. It feels like we're going to get all of these matches every week against the Chad Gables and the Mustafa Ali's, and then it builds up to a bigger feud with somebody else, and maybe, unfortunately, maybe it goes to Solo Sika and it goes down some of the bloodline. It goes to Gunther, it goes to these other people. But if you don't have the true hatred for guys, I'm wondering whether he works himself into that role of getting frustrated and the fans starting to turn against him. And the second the fans start to even think about booing him, that he goes, you know what, it's not worth it.
Yeah, and his character, like, it's a strong babyface character, don't get me wrong, but it also just, there's also a sense of it where it's like, there's a heel there that's just kind of waiting. I mean, usually you don't get a babyface that's like in a nice suit, the blonde hair, you know, kind of making a central focus about himself, going out there and cutting promos. A lot of the elements of Cody is very heelish, but he's just kind of able to, you know, put in his own charm and his own ability to turn it into a babyface promo. The thing with Cody is, like, you know, it's kind of funny looking back now in his final couple of months at AEW, where the crowd was really heel. And we thought that maybe it was, you know, he had the Homelander-esque gear nearing the end, and maybe this was kind of a turn to the dark side. And then he left, and there's talk of him, you know, he just kind of wanted to stay a babyface. I wonder if he'd be more open to be a heel in WWE. And you might say, yes, like WWE has that influence to tell him, hey, you're going to be a heel now. But they've treated Cody ever since he's joined the company as this massive star from the beginning. So it wouldn't shock me if Cody wants to try and extend this babyface run as long as he can before any sort of conversation of a heel run even begins. Would it make sense to turn him heel at some point? Absolutely. I thought that's the way it was going to go eventually with him in AEW, is with all the crowd kind of turning on him. It was very John Cena-esque, as we kind of mentioned earlier, where it's like, you know, he comes out, he acts like a babyface to an extent, but this crowd is just absolutely booing him. I could eventually see that happening, because I do see with Cody, there is a little bit of a repetitiveness to him that could probably get old for some. And so I think that's more of a bridge to kind of cross once we get there. I think they can milk out this babyface run much longer, right to the end of the year, I think.
All right. Before we leave this topic and get on to some other wide ranging issues, at least that I have for WrestleMania, who is down the line? Let's say Cody wins, okay? Like, well, let's just talk hypothetically. Doc, start with you. Who is the opponent that down the line you think not would be the best? I think a Gunther, and maybe the answer is Gunther for you, but I think a Gunther-Cody Rhodes match would be awesome. I just don't think it has the biggest potential to sell a classic heel against babyface where you actually think the title could switch hands, like a build up to a match you really, really want to see. Who is that in the WWE with Cody Rhodes?
Great question. I would think,
oh, I might even carry this episode. Wow, Tanner.
Oh, man, you're holding
a great
on to
question
that
is Zach. Yeah.
You are holding on to that. I would throw it at Jey Uso, actually. I think Jey Uso in the future, you could do a storyline where Roman loses to Cody, and then Cody kind of does his title defense, and you continue with the bloodline stuff. Jey Uso kind of wondering his place in the bloodline, and finally kind of comes to a boiling point where in order for Jey Uso to prove that he belongs in the bloodline, he eventually wins the title from Cody. And then maybe you kind of go back to a Jey Uso Roman Reigns feud, because the only other thing that if Cody does lose at Mania, the only other feud that would make sense for Roman to drop the belt would be to Jey Uso in my mind. Because I look at some of the quality of the opponents that they have around him. It's just kind of tough kind of looking at that roster and going, yeah, this is a guy that, can certainly take the title off of Cody. There is one other name that kind of popped in, and I was going to say it, but I was thinking, kind of, you know, talking myself into the Jey Uso answer here. But with all that surrounding Jay White and how his contract status in terms of where will he go? Will he go to AEW? Will he go to WWE? What's sort of the stronger of the two? If they wanted to establish Jay White right away, they could have Jay White be, you know, they could have Jay White win the title from Cody and establish him right away if they were able to get him. Otherwise, if they're not able to get Jay White, I would think Jey Uso, if you want to continue that bloodline story, would be an interesting opponent that I would like to see just from a story aspect. And I'm sure those two would have a great match in there as well.
He gave you a pretty good lead up time to think about your answer, Tanner. And it was a half educated answer. So I mean, it might be tough to beat.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I see Jey Uso going kind of in an entirely different direction post-Mania, if I'm being honest. So
he's kind of
ruled out for me. I think after WrestleMania, Jey Uso is not going to be in the bloodline.
Oh, not at all.
I think maybe he plays some sort of a role in letting Cody win. Maybe he has the chance to stop it from happening, and he doesn't because of being dragged along by Roman for so long, and then Roman goes and does his time off, and I think we get like a Jey Uso versus Roman Reigns come SummerSlam or something once Roman is back in the fold. But I don't see Jey Uso and Cody Rhodes as a real money match. I think Jey Uso is going to be a babyface after Mania. So for me, when I'm thinking about like a big match for Cody Rhodes, I'm thinking SummerSlam, and the one name that really comes to mind for me is Randy Orton once he's back. I think Orton's a big star. I think there's a story there with the two of them dating all the way back to the Legacy. Even the stuff in 2013 with Cody getting fired briefly and coming back and winning the tag titles from the Shield. I really think there's a story there of Cody Rhodes proving himself by beating like the second biggest guy of our generation in Randy Orton. I've seen it thrown out there before that even if you want to take it a step further, that maybe Cody wins in the end and they do their little handshake only for Orton to drop him. And then we get LA Knight running down with the Money in the Bank briefcase. Something I'd be on board for as well, but I'll keep it at Randy Orton for now. Randy Orton and Cody Rhodes. I'd love to see that.
That's not a bad pick. I mean, I'm not the biggest Orton fan.
Hold on. Okay. I understand that you want to comment on this, but a casual throwing in LA Knight winning Money in the Bank, like in the middle of his Randy Orton answer, that's great stuff. Like to even think about getting an LA Knight reference into this conversation and having it make sense. Oh my God. Go ahead, Zach. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I like the Randy Orton pick. I'm not the biggest fan of him as a wrestler personally. I find him incredibly overrated, to be quite honest. From a story aspect, it makes a ton of sense. And that's a great main event that they could do. I'm not as into the LA Knight winning the Money in the Bank contract and winning it, the title. I don't know if you propose the winning the title element to it, but...
What do you mean? He just said winning the title.
There has to be a title when we haven't had a Money in the Bank cash in successfully since how long now? It's overdue.
It's been a while. And so I'm not the biggest fan of LA Knight winning it. Just as a performer. I mean, I don't think he's as bad as some people make him out to be. I think he works perfectly well for that WWE roster, but that's just like a different topic for another day. But the Randy Orton
script.
As far as the Randy Orton stuff, yeah, I think that's a great SummerSlam main event there if they want to do that. And you immediately reestablish Randy Orton in that scene and get him back in there, and you add some depth in the main event scene. And so I don't dislike it. I mean, I'm again not the biggest fan of Orton as a wrestler, but I'm sure those two would have a solid match.
You guys have come up with two opponents that I could see, if worked properly, to be very, very good, credible opponents. That if Jey Uso in the right story was put in the position that he could win the title, and Roman was pissed and Jey didn't help him at WrestleMania, and then Jey went on to win the title and Roman came back, like, at least I can see that's good storytelling. Randy Orton coming back and going back to as far as the Legacy and having, you know, the generational wrestlers to be able to go through a feud like this. I understand what you're talking a little bit, Zach, about being overrated. I think I probably don't think as much as you do, but I do think of a little bit that he gets too much credit because he's really silky smooth sometimes and he can execute some things. But I at least buy into both of your arguments that Randy Orton and Jey Uso could be that credible guy to come in and beat Cody Rhodes. I actually have the worst answer of the three, which is, you know, saying
how humble
a lot.
Of you. I was just going to say how humble of you to say you got the worst one.
It's still a great answer, but like,
there it is.
But I'm loving both of those. See, for me, I go back to what we were talking about before, about having somebody that's bigger and stronger and credible that you're like, instantly, before you tell me about what their feud is going to be about, I can believe that this guy would beat him. And then give me a proper story, and I'll tell you that building up a better heel, Brock Lesnar, and fighting Cody Rhodes would be like, make Brock the monster that he was, and stop with this almost crap and whatever, how much fun Brock Lesnar's having these days. Like, it's just terrible, terrible television. Brock Lesnar is terrible television. This is what the WWE has done, right? Like, you might not have loved everything that Brock Lesnar ever did with Paul Heyman, and but when he came out, he was credible, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
He came out and people were like, yeah, this dude is just insane and he could beat anybody on this roster. Make him into that again, because he's nothing of the sort now. Make him into the biggest heel in the company and put him up against Cody Rhodes. Because to me, at the end of that, while Brock doesn't have to win, he could win. And if Cody beat him, it's a great win against Jey Uso. I think it would be a really good win against Randy Orton. But if Randy Orton comes back and just inserts himself in the title picture after being out for a long, long time and having his last run kind of be with Riddle, and people loved RK-Bro, but it wasn't serious. If you just insert yourself back into the title picture, well, it might be a great match, or like they can do some good business. I'm never going to believe that Randy Orton's going to actually beat Cody Rhodes. So for me, I want someone that I really, truly believe can beat that guy and maybe will beat that guy and is going to go on and be a badass world champion. To me, that's Brock Lesnar. So I've just talked myself into now being the best answer when I thought it was the worst. I actually think it's turning Brock into what he was previously and having that guy go out and chase Cody Rhodes feels like good television to me. So you guys came close, though, Tanner. I want you to know that I thought your answer was number one. I feel like it's 1B. Zach's is, number three or four with a gap from two to three, but still a good answer, Zach. Anyway, I think those are some at least viable options. Not that we're going to get them, but I think for fans and what they want to see, I think that's what we're trying to talk about here. Speaking about what fans want to see, they will not see the Usos against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn in the main event of night number one of WrestleMania. Tanner, how do you feel about that?
I think it's a missed opportunity for sure. I think it's the hottest match going into Mania with the best build behind it. But from a company standpoint, I can see why it makes sense to have a women main event one of the nights of WrestleMania at the very least. I believe last year we didn't have a women's main event, if I'm not mistaken. It was a while ago.
No, you're right, because I believe the main event last year, one of them was the Stone Cold Steve Austin segment.
Yes, with Kevin Owens. Yes.
And then the title match the next night. Yeah.
And then also thinking back in recent memory, when I think it was the year before that, it was the WWE title the one night, and then it was AJ and The Undertaker. So I can see why, from a company standpoint, it's been a long time since we've had a women main event one night of WrestleMania. Night two, we're already going to have sort of the A plot of that storyline when it comes to the Bloodline. So I could understand why you don't want to just ride both nights of WrestleMania on what the Bloodline is doing. But yes, that being said, if it was up to me, I would be putting the tag match in the very end. But I can totally understand why they're doing it this way.
Zach?
Well, I made it clear for the last couple of weeks that if you really want to show me that this is the greatest storyline that the WWE has ever booked, put this match in the main event. And, again, from a company standpoint, as Tanner mentioned, you put the women's main event, the women's title in the main event, you get Charlotte in there, you continue to build up that credibility. But man, I'm telling you, like, you got this hype around this storyline. This is the best storyline in WWE, and this is a subsect of that storyline. This has to main event night one. The build between Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair has been so lackluster. Like, it'd be one thing if it was like the build was strong for this women's match and, it was tough to call, but the company views it this way, and so at least I can understand where they're going with it. But the build for this Charlotte Flair and Rhea Ripley match has just been lackluster, to the point where I cannot believe it's even a discussion, let alone a foregone conclusion for some that it will main event the night. So I've made it clear it has to main event. There's still time. They could change it around. It's WWE. They could change plans. If they go forward with Charlotte and Rhea as the main event for night one, I think it's a huge mistake.
Zach coming strong now. See, this is what you need to do, Tanner. Sometimes it's just pick at him, and then you get his best stuff. I'll have to try and pick at you more, Zach. I usually don't like to, but I'll have to pick at you more to be able to get...
What do you mean you don't pick at me? What are you talking about?
To be able to get some of this good stuff out, I'm going to have to really come after you now.
Oh, boy. The last couple of minutes has not been coming after me? Is that what you're saying?
Did you just high voice question mark me?
I did high voice question mark you.
Oh, okay. It wasn't very good. but you make a lot of sense. And I'm with you. If we're gonna go back to Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey and Charlotte Flair that main evented WrestleMania, you know why they main evented WrestleMania? Because they earned it, and they should absolutely have the opportunity to main event one night, both nights. Doesn't matter. Like I think we've come to a place in our lives now where. Okay, you're going to get equal opportunity here, but you still have to deserve it. And I don't care if it's a man or a woman or what they're going. If you earn the opportunity to main event WrestleMania, if you deserve it, if you're not put in that spot, man or woman, the rest of the locker room goes, this is where I don't want to be. Like, I'll get paid and I'll be here, but you're telling me that there's a ceiling. And I think one of the things in wrestling organizations and even in life, when you start to put ceilings on people, that's a very, very dangerous road to go down, to think that you're going to get the best out of people. I'm not faulting anybody, but I'm not interested in seeing Rhea Ripley and a babyface Charlotte Flair, who might be the worst babyface champion with that amount of talent that I've ever seen. Like, not one time do I want to watch Charlotte Flair be a babyface on my television, ever.
Yeah.
She's not good at it. It's like Bayley being a heel. You know what? She's just not good at it. It's okay. Because Charlotte Flair is a great, great heel. And Bayley's a decent babyface in this world of people not having a lot of baby faces that are like very, very genuine. Why are we trying to make people into what they're not? Right? Like, disagree with me if you want, but Charlotte Flair is not a good baby face, just like Bayley's not a good heel. It doesn't mean they're not talented. It doesn't mean they're not fantastic wrestlers and can do a lot of great things, but there is a true to wanting to watch Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens against the Usos that they have threaded in for a very, very, very long time. And now we're at the end of it, and we're going to put women in the main event because they haven't been there in the last couple of years. And we think Charlotte Flair, because of her name, can be there and she can hold it down. Well, you know what? She might be able to hold it down, but I don't want to watch it. Like, I'm not interested in that, and I've tried to be interested in it. And some of the WWE programming, when we say, you know, it hasn't necessarily caught our attention and it's been a harder follow. The WWE has been a harder follow over the last little while, but harder follow makes it even more for the hardcore fan. I think we're all hardcore fans, and I don't want to speak for you guys, but the WWE is much lower than, say, an AEW or a New Japan in this day and age, correct?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So with that said, you're desperately hoping, because you don't follow it as much as you do some of the other promotions, that something actually grabs your attention to say, come with me, we're going to tell a great story, and you actually need to watch this. And they've done that with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and the Bloodline. They've done it. I'm really, quite frankly, and I know we'll have a WrestleMania picks episode, and I'll pretend to be excited about a lot of things coming up in a couple of days. Sorry, Zach. It'll be a little bit fake's not the right word. I'll have to try a little bit harder.
Embellished? To be excited.
Zach, you're the diver of the group, not me, okay? Okay. You've gotten called on the carpet for diving before, embellishing. I have a clean record. I'm the Chris Neal of the group. Okay.
Well, I
see. I might have deserved a lot of penalties, but I was never suspended. And I can say I was never suspended, even though I did 19 things that I should have been suspended for. I never got suspended, because when I didn't get suspended for the first four or five of them, then I could say I've never been suspended before. Yeah. Oh yeah, you haven't. You know what? Your record's going to get you off this time too.
Yeah.
And that's how
is this the Jesse Ventura line of it's not illegal if you don't get caught?
Well, it's bordering on that. I'm really with you though, to get back to the point of it's been a harder fall of the WWE, I think, for all of us. And the one storyline that's brought us in is this one.
Yeah.
And so you're not putting this as the main event and you have two nights. Like, honestly, this could main event night number two. It's been that big. Yeah. So to put Charlotte Flair and Rhea Ripley in a really poorly booked feud on as the main event, simply because of the name, the lineage of Flair, because you think you're doing the right thing for mainstream. Yeah. Sometimes if you want to go out and be match of the night, you want to be able to go be talked about by ESPN and all over the place, then go out and have a match that gets talked about. You don't have to be the main event to go out and be talked about. Mm-hmm. So go out there and after night one, go, you know what? I went into night one wanting Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, and that was the only thing I cared about. But man, Charlotte Flair and Rhea Ripley was the best thing ever. You can still do that. Yeah. And you don't have to have it as the main event. It really bothers me, because I think when they've earned the opportunity, and Sami Zayn and the Usos specifically, a little bit less Kevin Owens because he hasn't been around the entire time, but they've earned the opportunity. They have worked their ass off week after week after week after week to get people in to this huge payoff. And they're going to have Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair fall, like, be the last match. Come on.
Yeah.
I find it almost embarrassing. So Tanner, I really appreciate the level-headedness from you to be able to say, but guys, I understand it and here's why. But I actually agree with a lot of what you said. I just don't think it should happen. That's all.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other wide-ranging WrestleMania stuff that you guys want to talk about before we get to a little C4 and a little AEW?
No, not on my mind, no.
I think I'm good.
Wow. See, WWE folks, tougher follow than some of the other things. Okay, C4. Last Friday night, I watched a highlight, Tanner, of it might not have been Vikingo and Kenny Omega, but I did see Junior Benito fly and fly and fly some more at the latest C4 event.
Fly he did. That was easily the match of the night. I want to get to it in a moment, because there's definitely some storyline stuff that happened earlier in the night that we have to talk about before then. Quite a bit of narrative things that went on Friday at C4. But yeah, C4 Extreme Prejudice, very, very solid show. We started with the C4 Tag Team Championships. The new champions, Hawk Stepper, we talked about their match with Violence is Forever last month. They were defending against the team of Locked and Loaded. And they did retain in their first title defense. Solid, solid opener. Hawkstepper always gets the crowd moving. I mean, they've got one of the best entrance theme songs in the game, which is a lot to say considering we just had Violence is Forever as our champions. Solid, solid matchup. Really excited to see more of Hawkstepper as a team. They mesh out like really well. Really enjoyed that one.
Zach, mm-hmm. If our tag team was Locked and Loaded, would you be Locked or Loaded?
I think I'd be Locked. I think okay. You would be Loaded.
Okay.
What do you think?
No, I would agree with you. You know what? We're on the same page, Zach. Okay. You're definitely locked into something.
There you go.
Go ahead, Tanner.
All right. And then moving on, the rest of the shows, I've got it a little bit out of order. Other than the main event, the results haven't been posted to Cage Match. So if I'm a little off, I apologize to anyone who is in attendance. But next up,
heaven forbid you write it down or something while you're at the show.
I know. Hey, I was trying to enjoy the C4 atmosphere. You know what I mean? I wasn't on my phone very much. Yeah. It's always high energy. You got to pay attention at C4.
Not going to get the notebook out, no?
No, no, not this time.
Scribble, you know?
You know, but next up we had Puff and Pretty Ricky teaming up to take on the Tiger and the Wolf. And this is where we start getting to those important narrative threads, because by the end of the match, the Tiger and the Wolf were left in the ring, and Zach's three favorite individuals decided to make their way down.
Oh boy.
You know where I'm going with this, Zach?
I think so.
Well, it was Twiggy and Le Tabernacle team.
Oh, I love those guys.
And they started absolutely berating specifically the Diamond Tiger, Kobe Durst, and how far he has fallen in C4 from the days of the Knights of Columbus, when C4 used to be this tough promotion and the fans weren't as soft. And Kobe Durst was at one point a double champion within C4 as the C4 and C4 Underground champion, to now where he's coming out and teaming with a guy wearing a wolf mask. And they were berating Kobe Durst to the point of him walking out, which will come back up later on in the show.
Nice little tease. I love it.
Anyways, moving on. We had a four-way matchup, pretty typical for C4. We had Cecil Nix picking up the win against Harlan Abbott, who was making his debut, as well as Megabyte Ronnie, another debut, and a good old C4 regular who's been a little bit more mainstream recently, Sexy Eddie, after what he did in GCW.
Yeah, that's been a spot that he's been doing for years, so it's funny how all of a sudden it kind of went back into the mainstream again when it comes to the moonsaults of the birthday suit variety. I was interested. I saw the trunks as well. I won't describe it for the sake of keeping our program on the air, but it was interesting. But I will say, Megabyte Ronnie, by the way, competitive eater on the side as well. He did some competitive eating for a time. I think still does. And he was on Dark a while back. I think he was on, what was that show that Cody was on for TBS, where it was like that panel show with Snoop Dogg and whatever. It was kind of like America's Got Talent. You know what I'm talking about though, right, Lee? I think Megabyte Ronnie was on that show and then got
the Go Big Show or something along those lines.
Go Big Show. That's I believe that's what the show was. Yeah. So I believe that's where Megabyte Ronnie's fame comes from.
He also wore a fanny pack down to the ring. And within that fanny pack, I believe, was a piece of pizza. I'm not sure, but it was used in some version of the people's elbow and went flying everywhere. All I saw was a big old people's elbow and food absolutely flying everywhere.
That was a collection of words put into a sentence I was not expecting, so to continue.
But yeah, Sexy Eddie's trunks may have been the highlight of the entire match.
Yes.
I'm trying to figure out how I could possibly describe this on TSN. Whoa.
No, we could just say, just go to the social media pages. It's all over.
Yeah. There. My thought would maybe say like Giant Gonzalez's suit, but without the hair, and it was only the trunks.
Yeah, exactly. Let's just go with that.
That's the best way we can describe it.
That's a good description. Yeah.
We'll leave it at Cecil Nix picking up the win there in that four-way matchup.
Perfect. Could you be more descriptive of the Tanner? Like, I don't really have an idea of what you're talking about right now.
Well, he came out in black sweatpants and then tore them off, and his trunks design were essentially like Giant Gonzalez's bodysuit, but only down there. You know, how it's like see-through and you could see all the muscles and, you know.
Yeah. The vascularity, you know.
Yeah, yeah, you could definitely see some vascularity, I can tell you that.
Did he get a good reaction?
Very, very good.
Oh, would you say he got a big pop?
He got a very big pop.
Yeah.
Zach, can I change back to I'd like to be locked and you can be loaded? After that comment. Oh my God. Zach. Oh my God.
What? I'm just saying. You got a huge crowd reaction.
Not what you were saying. Continue, Tanner.
All right. Getting back to our sort of main storyline, as I was talking about earlier, we had Bucks Belmar and Junior Benito taking on TDT. Match of the night, in my opinion. Very brutal street fight. As soon as TDT hit the ring, they were all over each other. At one point, there were people fighting over in the merch stand by the corner, and then people fighting up by the ramp, if you know what C4's type of style is like. So basically two far corners of the ring, and weapons were flying everywhere. There were steel chairs. I think two doors, courtesy of Preston Hardware, were put to the use. And as you mentioned, the highlight going around everywhere was Junior Benito running from one corner of the ring to the other, jumping over it onto a pile of C4 staff, and of course the three other competitors. Absolutely brutal matchup. It looked like, though, finally, whenever it was hitting its pinnacle, Twiggy decided to come down and run the interference, and because he was banned from ringside, the match was called out as a disqualification in favor of Benito and Belmar.
I love Twiggy.
That damn Twiggy.
What a bad rap.
Just as the three of them seemed to be outnumbering Belmar and Benito, Kobe Durst came down and stood beside Benito and Belmar, making it 3-on-3 for a couple of seconds before turning around and dropping Benito and Belmar, with the three of them laying into a 4-on-2 beatdown. Kobe Durst looking very angry. It's almost like he's got a new fire lit underneath him. Benito was placed in a trash can to end the night, because that was also a running theme of Twiggy's promo earlier, saying like, oh, you guys, this used to be like a tough promotion. And then at the start of the show, they were reminding us to pick up our trash because a wedding was happening in the venue the next day. And that never would have happened at the Knights of Columbus 4 years ago.
I like it. I like it. I like that.
Who got married the next day? This is information we need to know.
Absolutely no idea.
Oh.
Darn.
Wasn't mentioned. Not a wrestling fan, I guess. So who cares? Yeah.
I like it. I like it. Yeah. Not there for the reception, I gather.
No, definitely not.
No.
Anyways, moving on. We had James Stone defending the C4 Underground Championship, which he won from Joshua Bishop last month. He took on Mach 10. It was someone I was completely unfamiliar with, Masked Luchador, which was your typical brute versus luchador type matchup of speed versus size, one of them trying to use the ropes and do all these high-flying moves, with Stone more so grounding him. We had, of course, the Mountain Vanessa Craven on the outside providing the interference, and James Stone was able to successfully defend his title in his first defense as Underground Champion.
Mach 10. Where do we think this came from?
Not I wonder. Top Gun, I would assume. Not Top Gun, I would assume.
Definitely not.
No. I've not heard of Mach 10 too much, but I've heard some good things about him on the independent scene. So okay. How did he look in this match?
Is he an Ottawa guy?
Yeah, I was very just going to ask.
I think American, but I can't recall off the top of my head. I've never heard of him before the evening.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, do you know, in this... It wouldn't date you guys because you guys know your history. Who was one of, if not the most exciting Ottawa senator as far as pure skill and talent is concerned? Ever in the history. Like, not best player. Talking about pure speed and talent. Mach 9. Marty Havlat.
Oh, yes, Martin Havlat.
I'm just wondering about the Mach 10 thing.
Martin Havlat under a mask.
Well, what if it was Marty Havlat? Or what if they just wanted to do one better because they were in Ottawa and that's where the gimmick came from? I'm not sure.
Asking the real questions here. I like it.
I'll say, just based on his look, I don't think it was Martin Havlat. But yeah, he was good. He was good. He definitely impressed me, as most luchadors do. Like, the high octane offense is always fun to watch, for sure.
Yeah.
I like it.
But onwards, we had the big one-on-one match, arguably the biggest of the night, other than the C4 championship match, which we'll get to in a moment. Stu Grayson taking on Brian Keith. Brian Keith, another name I wasn't familiar with until this week. He has a wicked nickname of the Bounty Hunter, which, as a Star Wars fan, I could definitely appreciate that. Taking on Stu Grayson, of course, one of C4's, like, most recognized and decorated competitors at this point, not to mention fresh off of a match with John Moxley on Wednesday night, since he's recently re-signed with AEW. Mere 48 hours taking on Brian Keith. really solid matchup. I heard a lot of people talking after that, both on social media and in the venue, that they'd really like to see Brian Keith coming back to C4, and I'm on board with it. Honestly, someone I'd really like to see mix it up with some more guys in the division.
A fun story about Brian Keith. I actually interviewed him nearly 10 years ago when he was just breaking into the scene with Reality of Wrestling, Booker T's promotion. And this is when I was just getting into podcasting, and did about a 10-15 minute interview with him. And it's kind of funny how it's all kind of evolved now, and now he's becoming a name on the scene. That interview is still up there. I shared it on my social media recently. So if you want to hear a high school me try and interview a professional wrestler, go on right ahead. But it's kind of cool to see how he's grown.
That's a tease. to think that you could listen to High Voice Question Mark the entire interview.
Yes. Yeah, I was just going to say, imagine High Voice Question Mark, but the entirety of the interview. That was my voice around that time. Much more refined now. Not perfect, certainly, but better. Nonetheless, just kind of an interesting factoid there. So it's cool to see that he was able to get his C4 debut and wrestle Stu Grayson. So it's cool how it's that's all developed. So it was, and I heard the match was really, really good.
Yeah, it was absolute banger. Very, very good. As to be expected. I mean, anytime you put Stu Grayson in the C4 ring, he's guaranteed to have one of the best matches of the night, regardless of who he's wrestling. And there was the handshake at the end, the sign of respect between the two of the biggest competitors on the card.
Yep. There you go.
For sure. And then moving on, we had a women's trios match, kind of headed up by, I'd say, C4's two most regular female competitors at this point. Alexia Nicole on one side and Taylor Rising on the other. Alongside Nicole, there was Edith Surreal, I believe, making her C4 debut, and Kristara, who we've seen a couple of times. And then with Taylor Rising was Jordan Blade and Ava Lawless. Fairly solid match. It seemed like, again, the story of the match was really Taylor Rising and Alexia Nicole. They've kind of gone back and forth, traded wins quite a couple times over the last couple of years in C4. My main thought just sort of coming out of this matchup is I'm wondering if perhaps they're building towards a C4 Women's Championship. Just because it's something we haven't seen in the promotion. It seems like the matches are becoming a little more regular, especially with Nicole and Rising. They're two people I'd love to see fight for a women's championship in C4.
I know that that Mark, I should say C4, has partnered with Femme Fatale a couple of times in the past, so I wonder if he kind of views that as that's the women's championship. So, I mean, couldn't be out of the realm of possibility that could happen, but you know, those two, Alexia Nicole and Taylor Rising, those are pretty much standout women's wrestlers on the Ontario independent scene, and have been spreading out as well into I saw they wrestled in Winnipeg as well, and so it's interesting to see how that's kind of grown and just bringing in different female talents and just kind of continue to build them. I think personally, like, I haven't seen enough Taylor Rising to really say that she belongs on a main roster. I've seen, she's been very good, but to be Alexia Nicole, like I've said it before, she's been on a couple of darks now, and to me, she's somebody that could be on a main event TV. She's easily NXT anyway, when that ever happens. And so I'm pretty high up on Alexia Nicole. So,
yeah, I agree 100%. I think she was even at dark when we attended AEW back in the spring or the summer.
That's right. Yeah. I saw who is the Jody Threat is going to debut in Impact as well. That's another standout on the women's side in the Ontario scene. She's going to debut for Impact pretty soon. They have some vignettes for her, so that's a good signing there. I think she's really, really good as well.
For sure. I mean, after the two I just mentioned, I think she'd probably be right up there if I was to talk about a C4 women's title. I guess a couple of months ago now. Obviously, if she's gone to Impact, that might be a little bit less likely, but
yeah,
definitely good to see more C4 people rising up like that.
For sure. No pun intended.
Yeah, exactly. moving on, we had a triple threat matchup before we get to the main event of Gabriel Fuerza, Myung Jae Lee, and Leighton Buzzard. If I do recall correctly, I think there may have been a fourth person added to this matchup on the night of, but I can't recall off the top of my head. But it was Fuerza who picked up the win in the end. We saw him win the Rumble a couple of shows ago, so it seems like they're really high on Fuerza. He's been picking up a lot of wins in C4 kind of since Fight or Flight were forced to split up at the start of the season, him and Von Vertigo. So I'm wondering, you know, maybe if there's an underground title match in his future or something like that, coming soon. But he's been featured a lot as far as whether it be this triple threat. There was the the street fight a couple of months ago with Alexi Nicole as well. But yeah, another big win here for Gabriel Farza.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, excellent.
And then we get to the main event, or as I call it, the battle of two tattooed Kevins who like to kick a lot, because we had Kevin Blackwood taking on Kevin Koo for the C4 championship. Much to the crowd's enjoyment of chanting, "Let's go, Kevin," as nice. The two of them would point at each other and
smart crowd
try to determine who they were talking about.
Love it.
But we've talked a lot about Kevin Blackwood's reign. We've kind of covered it each and every month about how each of the matches has kind of felt like a little bit different from the other. We had the Gresham match, which is more of a submission and like a mat-based wrestling match. There was the 60-minute Iron Man match with Stu Grayson, where it was him kind of outlasting Stu until the end. And then just trying to come off the top of my head who he fought last month. We were talking about it again. That was like a very different styled matchup, but it seems like every matchup for Kevin Blackwood on this reign has been very, very different compared to the last one. It was Joey Janela. Yeah. And it was more of the extreme hardcore matchup. To me, this one really felt like Kevin Blackwood fighting himself in a way. And I mean, when you look at him and Kevin Koo, obviously the two guys covered in tattoos, both the same kind of dyed hair, kick pads, they're almost identical. But it was a lot of one-upsmanship where one of them would do a move and then the other would try and one-up them and do the exact same thing. But a lot of hard strikes, incredible matchup. One of my favorites of the reign personally so far. And Kevin Blackwood did retain the C4 championship.
There you go. Interesting. They're continuing on the reign and just kind of giving him a lengthy defense. And as you mentioned, just different variety of opponents for Blackwood. I mean, he on the independent scene right now is certainly one of the top guys that's out there. He's a guy that's consistently pushed on different independents as at worst upper mid card guy on a lot of the independents. So it's interesting to see how they're just kind of continuing that push for Blackwood and continuing to, you know, establish him and trying to, you know, at the end of the day, it's the independents. You just want to continue to get better and better and on in the ring and being a reliable wrestler. And that's what they're kind of doing with Blackwood right now.
So your overall thought on this would be what?
Incredible show as always. I mean, I can't say a bad thing about C4. I loved it. Incredible show.
There you go.
Okay. And the next one coming up in April, I know has a couple of debuts.
April 28th. Yes, a couple of very, very big debuts. We've got Gringo Loco being advertised. Someone I'm not super familiar with. I've heard the name. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's definitely a big one. They're advertising the returns of Lufisto, Evil Uno, and Stu Grayson, which are, of course, always going to be big in their own right. But I think the big one for me and for a lot of people is someone you may be familiar with if you've been keeping up with AEW and Ring of Honor as of late, is Commander.
Yeah.
Commander.
Yeah. That's a great booking. Yeah. I think it's Commander, but that's a great pickup, especially coming off the heels of that performance in the ladder match a couple of weeks ago where he really put himself on the map for a lot of people. And now this upcoming match against Vikino at the Reign of Honor pay-per-view. I mean, perfect timing for him to get booked. And Gringo Loco, a GCW guy, pretty much a regular for GCW. He's been called the base god because he's a great base for a bunch of all the other luchadors. He'll also be very impressive as well. He's the stuff I've seen from Gringo Loco and GCW. He's always been solid. So
yeah, definitely a couple solid gets. I'm really interested to see where they're going to get placed on the card, whether it's like Gringo Loco versus Commander, or if Blackwood's maybe defending against one of them and maybe Stu's facing another. We've got Evil Uno mixed in there. It's going to be an absolutely amazing show. I can't wait to see where C4 inserts them into the card.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so great C4 card, and looking forward to what's coming up in April. We do have to get some AEW stuff because I need your guys, first of all, before we talk about CM Punk, just what you thought of Kenny Omega and Vikingo. And I'm just disappointed in the way they got there, I find it incredibly fortunate to watch what we got to watch. That's just my opinion. I don't know what you guys thought of the match, but to be able to watch that and go, we just got that for free television, makes me feel good again about AEW. But I also was disappointed that if this is a dream match for the two of them, it was a dream match for a lot of fans. How did we just like, oh, Kenny Omega is fighting Vikingo next week? Like, how did we get here? I was a little bit disappointed with that.
There could be a little bit more. I'm not going to be the guy that's like, man, we needed a video package, like a real in-depth video package on Vikingo or anything like that. But having said that, like, to me, I think it's okay to kind of keep an air of curiosity when it comes to a wrestler, especially in the case of Vikingo, where if you have somebody that's not familiar with him, not familiar with his work in Mexico, and you hear all these great stuff about Vikingo, to me, you don't want to show all that move. And the first time a viewer sees Vikingo is all the moves that he performed on Kenny Omega there in that match. And then that's when you kind of go, oh, wow, that's Vikingo, right? As opposed to kind of giving it away in a video package where you just show all the moves. It's like, oh, wow, he does some really cool stuff. So having said that, I thought the match was incredible. I was totally blown away. This to me was like the best debut of a luchador on American TV since Rey Mysterio in the late 90s, WCW, easily. And to me, this isn't even the best Vikingo, which is crazy to say. He's 25 and there's still some stuff with him that he's got to work on in-ring wise. But he clearly saw the opportunity and just took a hold of it, because he went out there and did stuff that I had not seen Vikingo do in Triple A. And, you know, obviously people will talk about the 630 senton to the table, to the outside, the multiple different springboards that he did. I thought Kenny Omega was an incredible base in this match. Just being able to let Vikingo do all the moves that he wanted to do so that he could get over. I thought it was incredible. And I think I always say sometimes we take for granted just how good the matches we get on free TV are. I find sometimes some of the criticism of the AEW, and again, I don't want to come off as a defender, but sometimes it's a little bit excessive to try and come across as fair when it's okay to say it's just been really, really good TV over the last couple of weeks instead of going into the minutia of stuff. But boy, I thought this match was incredible. And it was a great showcase for Vikingo. And I'm sure a lot of people now want to see more Vikingo. And him being booked on Ring of Honor will help that with that as well. I thought it was an awesome match. I thought it was great.
And before you comment, Tanner, I will just beat the drum again that they did a really good job at leaving enough time for this match.
Yes.
And not cramming it in to, you know, they've had issues with cramming main events in because they've let other segments drag on too long that are not worthy of your time, when main events like this are worthy of every second of your time. They gave it enough time again. They've been much better, AEW, at learning from some past mistakes and not doing that over and over. And I want to give them full credit for that. They gave this match lots of time, Tanner.
Absolutely. And I'm coming with this from a bit of a different perspective than Zach. This was actually my introduction to Vikingo. I knew his name. I'd seen like the odd highlight and stuff, but this is the first actual bell to bell Vikingo match that I've ever seen. And yeah, I'm completely on Zach's side. I mean, it was a great free match, like to have on weekly AEW TV. I agree with that mindset of like, we don't need a video package every time, just kind of let them go out there and let two good wrestlers have a match. You know, if he was challenging for the AEW World Championship, you know, maybe I'd be a little bit on the fence and saying like, okay, I'd like an introduction to this guy. But if it's an exhibition match against Kenny Omega, I think the way that people were talking about Vikingo and how amazing he was enough to like get me excited and be like, okay, I've got to see this match. And yeah, it didn't disappoint. I mean, yeah, the 630 senton through the table was definitely the big spot. That was crazy to see this. To think like a 25-year-old's just pulling that off on AEW Dynamite is insane. But yeah, I definitely need to see more.
Yeah, and one other spot too that totally blew my mind was the Poison Rana off the top and the way Omega sold that. Like, that was so well done. There's just so much in this match I could rave about. I loved it. I'm telling you, it's like sometimes like we got to appreciate the stuff that we got, not to say that they're absolved of criticism. As you mentioned, Lee, God, do they rush main events sometimes and don't leave enough time to breathe. And I think we even saw that a couple of weeks ago with the Omega cliffhanger with Omega and the Bucks with Hangman. Yeah. I think there's supposed to be more there, and they should have let that story develop. And there's been other things on the programming as well that I've been critical of, like, you know, the stuff with Swerve Strickland. What are they doing with the group that he's in? And why is Matt Hardy still on my TV in 2023? But nonetheless, yeah, like, the stuff that we get that's really good on this show is really, really good. And sometimes I think we kind of lose sight of that. All that to say, yeah, this was incredible. I thought it was so good.
Okay, so to open up AEW Dynamite, suddenly the Young Bucks got attacked and they're going to be gone. And we didn't see who attacked them, which is always good suspense-filled theater, right? About people guessing who it possibly could be. And then to do it in front of, and we'll get to the Instagram post in a minute, but to do it in front of the production truck that had CM Punk's face on it, that they put up boards, I mean, this is clearly done on purpose. Okay, so there's absolutely no mistaking, oh my God, we're going to film this segment, but there's CM Punk's face. Somebody cover it up quick, because we're going to film the segment. Yeah, that doesn't happen. So then we get the Instagram post. I don't know if you have it there, Zach.
I can pull it up while you're talking, but yes.
But so when I watch this, I couldn't believe how excited I was to watch basically a production truck covered up with a board. And I'm like, I'm all in on this, because you can tell right away. I didn't need to find out that CM Punk was on the back of the other side of the truck to know it was CM Punk and to know exactly what they're doing. So I was really, really excited about this. Because after some of the comments from CM Punk and he misses wrestling and the Steve Kern book and blah, 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 blah. Like, could they possibly patch this up? Okay. Cue Instagram post from CM Punk.
Yes. I have the Instagram post up here now. And it's now deleted off of his story, but he says, "Sigh, I wasn't cleared to come back to wrestle yet. Then plan was to wrestle at the pay-per-view. I sat and listened to Moxley's Rocky III idea. I explained how I had never seen a Rocky movie. I thought the idea sucked, but if the boss wanted to do it, whatever. He said he wouldn't lose to me. I'd never experienced someone refusing to lose to me. I just laughed. I asked Tony if this was what he wanted. He said yes. He's the boss, so I said okay, but I need to be cleared first. They kept saying it could just be a squash, so I didn't need to be cleared. I scoffed at that. My health is more important. Dave Meltzer is a liar. Jericho is a liar and a stooge. There were plans, but plans always change, but I'll never put a company above my health ever again."
Okay, so I get excited about all of this stuff about Punk and the production truck. Tanner, I want you to tell me that I still can be excited, or should I not be excited anymore based off the Instagram post?
I think if there was any hope of CM Punk making a return, I think he just loaded a gun and shot himself in the foot. There's no way that I don't see it happening. Just after going and saying that stuff about Tony, about Jericho, just with the amount of pull that even Jericho has backstage, I don't see it happening. I think CM Punk in wrestling is done. And I don't want to say that, but I really do think that's the case.
Okay, so then Zach.
Yep.
Do we really think now that we were close on getting Punk back, and that's why they did it in front of the production truck, and that there was possibility of listening to Punk talk about how much he misses wrestling and patching things up? Or do you think the Instagram post is real? You always have to ask that in wrestling. But when you start calling people liars and stooges in public, you better have like not 99%, but 100% full support of the people that you're doing that with. Because if you don't, that's going to not go very well for you. And it's hard to believe that he would have 100%. Like the Tony Khan stuff, I can believe. It's the Jericho stuff that I don't necessarily believe. I don't care about Dave Meltzer. You can call Dave Meltzer a liar, and that's fine, because I think that just adds some, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? To respect to the name, because you're adding Meltzer in there, and everyone knows who Meltzer is. Yeah. But calling Jericho a liar, is Jericho really in on this, or is this was this just a shoot from Punk? Do you think this was real? What do you think about all this?
Yeah, so I think this is Punk spouting off, getting frustrated. The reason why he mentions Meltzer is because Dave put in his on the board on the Observer website talking about how when they were putting together the Moxley and Punk match, there was a legal letter apparently sent in from Punk. And now Punk explained it a little bit more on his side of the story, saying, well, they didn't clear me, and so I threatened, because, you know, we know with Punk's past, like when it comes to injuries and being thrown back in the ring, he didn't want to risk it. And so, which I think that's a big question to ask Tony Khan in the future, by the way, if he was telling a wrestler to go in there unclear just to do a squash match. But nonetheless, and the reason why he throws in Jericho is because there's a rumor, there's a rumor out there that one of Dave Meltzer's sources is Chris Jericho. And that's going back decades, since the WCW days. And so there's other elements as to why they believe Jericho. If you read certain elements of the Observer, there's, you know, to some, there's some that think that that sounds like what Jericho would say in certain reports. So that's why Punk kind of throws in Jericho. And also, Jericho is reportedly not a big fan of Punk. We've heard about, you know, the backstage confrontation, saying Jericho, you know, calling Punk a liar, or sorry, a toxic. So there's a lot going on there. I think it's a little bit of Punk trying to save face, because I think he realized the Buxton leak stuff to Dave Meltzer on reports. And I know the Observer has said they didn't hear anything from the Bucks when it comes, again, we're reopening the All Out stuff. But and so now he's turning his attention to Jericho so that he could try and get himself in a babyface role, continue to justify his actions for what happened at All Out. I think this is very much a shoot. It's all in character to what CM Punk would do. Just blow up and you know, not be afraid to burn a bridge. We've seen that with Punk in the past. You know, I look at the different things. You know, I was going to joke that the most controversial take of that Instagram post was Punk never seen a Rocky movie. I mean, how can you not see one Rocky movie? There's seven of them, like, to choose from, including the Creed movies. I guess eight now with Creed 3. But nonetheless, you kind of read through it, and I think Punk's definitely in the wrong. I think there are some guys in that locker room that I think needs to put some pride away. And this may be a controversial opinion, but I think some guys in that locker room need to put some personal pride away and do what's good for business. This is not a guy in Punk who, yes, he should absolutely apologize for what he said at the All Out press conference. The fact he still hasn't done that yet is indicative of to me of that, and should do other things. But I also get a sense that with Punk coming in, like, a lot of the top guys, they don't want to work with him. And I do not agree with the notion as well that because everything is guaranteed, these guys, there's no financial incentive to bring in Punk for business when you got a television rights deal coming up. Yes, they'll likely renew for bigger, but you could still try and get merchandise up. There's still other ways to make money. I know it's not cut of the house show like in the 90s anymore, but there's still ways to make money. And so I really just don't think there's a lot of, like, I think Punk for sure is the biggest person in all of this that doesn't in fervor. I think in terms of, like, you know, what's with Mox, it's like we saw as well the building up the idea with that big squash that Mox did on Punk on that episode of Dynamite, and then so quickly doing a rematch afterwards. They were trying to do the Rocky III storyline with Clubber Lang, where, you know, Clubber Lang beats up Rocky to a pulp, and then, you know, Rocky has to get back, and so that he could get back in the shape to beat Clubber Lang. I think that story works in a longer sense, but in this case, they had it really short, and the pay-per-view buy rate wasn't great. So I think some guys got to put some pride aside, be grown-ups, and it's just amazing to me how I feel like all of this could have been avoided if all these guys were just locked in a room, kind of like what Punk was saying off that Steve Kern book about how, you know, I believe it was Kern and another guy went into Lawler's office and they were able to hash out the heat that they had with each other in Memphis. To me, you gotta, this is still a young company. You still got to try and be financially set. I'm not saying if Punk is not there, the company is going to die, but this is a company that could certainly use that boost. I just look at this all, and I'm not going to say 100% because it's wrestling. Crazier things have happened. I'm not going to say 0% Punk is never coming back, but this certainly took a huge hit in trying to get people on your side. And I think Punk looks worse the more he talks. And we'll hear what Moxley has to say tomorrow in that Renee podcast. But I think a bridge is has been lit on fire. I don't think it's burned down yet. You can still call the fire department and try and control the flames a little bit. But yeah.
So both of you then tell me why AEW filmed the Young Bucks getting attacked in front of a CM Punk picture. Even though they covered it up, they knew what they were doing. Why did they do that?
Oh, I think they totally, you could have totally done that segment in other aspects of the building and not have to cover up Punk. So I think looking at the Instagram post, if you would have asked me 2 weeks ago before all this, I would have been telling you, oh yeah, Punk's coming back and he'll be back, you know, before even Double or Nothing, potentially with him being cleared from his injury. I would have told you he's coming back.
So you think that AEW thought they were close to bringing him back?
Yes.
Before the Instagram post?
Yes.
Do you think that's how the story goes? Tanner, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that was to plant the seeds for it. And then I'm wondering if maybe something went on behind the scenes with whether it's between Punk and Jericho or Punk and Moxley or Punk and the Elite or Punk and Tony Khan that kind of soured that. And then Punk made that post because he was pissed off.
Yeah. So what is the time frame of when he made the post?
Was it not a day or two later?
Wasn't it the next day?
Yeah, it was after the Vikingo Omega match. Yeah, I think that Thursday.
Right. Look, and maybe I'm just not, I don't know. I know I'm the crazy one on this and you guys are the smart ones and blah, blah, blah. You guys carry the show. But you want to tell me that AEW does a live segment teasing a CM Punk return and 12 or 14 hours later, CM Punk puts out an Instagram post and then deletes it? And that's a coincidence that it just happens to be in that short amount of time?
Only minutes after he posted, he deleted, yes.
So why did he delete it? He's a big enough star to know that regardless of whether he deleted it or not, that it was going to get out there.
Yes.
There is nobody in wrestling that's more polarizing than him.
Correct.
So why did he delete it? Why didn't he just leave it out there? If that's what he was feeling, why did he delete the post?
Who knows? Maybe he thought that at the last minute he realized that this was the wrong call and decided to delete it. Maybe it was, you know, totally tactical, which I think it was. To post and then delete just to get his name talking. But it could be for vindictive reasons.
Why would he care about getting his name talking if he's not coming and he's trying to, like, this isn't good for CM Punk, right? Like, there's nothing, what he did, there's nothing good about getting people talking about you that you're actually being a complete jerk. I was going to use another word, but like, a complete jerk to a company. It was like, for business, for yourself, even if you were to go to WWE or go to, so you're not doing yourself any favors here, right? Like, doing what he did and saying that and then deleting it doesn't do you any favors.
No.
I'm going to stay excited regardless of what you guys say, because when you call people liars, I would expect that if CM Punk is going to call you a liar and you're actually angry about it, and you think, like, with the name of CM Punk,
if you're on the right side of this and somebody, and he calls you a liar and you can prove that you weren't, or like that it's not liable, you're probably going to, no? Wouldn't you think that one of those guys in Meltzer or Tony Khan or Jericho, if this were actually really true, would say, hey, dude, I don't care. You deleted the post. This actually happened and you can't do that. You can't say that about me. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't they do something about this?
Well, Meltzer has, like, he did an Observer show this morning, I think. And it was kind of like, it was weird. He was like, he was saying how he's like, he was kind of regretful of what he posted. It was very weird. And I think, I don't see Meltzer as a guy that's like, I'm going to be used for a storyline. And I think it would just be bad optics in general for AEW to use one of their people to use somebody that they, you know, a journalist in the wrestling media space as a guy to be enhance a storyline.
But what do you mean? Why would AEW be using him as opposed to, why wouldn't CM Punk just throw his name out there to talk about a whole bunch of stuff? Like, throwing his name out there, Dave Meltzer is the least of CM Punk's concerns if he ever turned around and wanted to do something about it. Right. Tony Khan and Chris Jericho? Well, that's a little bit different.
Yeah.
I guess I just, maybe I'm being very naive here. I just, AEW does a whole thing covering up his face, and the next day he's on social media bashing the company to basically make it look like he's never, ever, ever coming back.
Yeah.
I'm not going to buy into this yet. I'm sorry. I'm not going to buy into it because Zach, you've been on this train for a long time.
Yep.
CM Punk is best for business for AEW.
Correct.
Period. End of story. So let's just say, and I'll go on a hypothetical here to end because I got to do something to live up to my name here. but might as well be fake, right? Or naive or anything else. Let's just say that CM Punk has gone and actually made up with Tony Khan and Chris Jericho in the locker room and all this stuff. Somehow behind the scenes, this is all now they have made up. Would you think that this is a good way of thinking that there's absolutely no way that he comes back for him to appear?
You mean like if it goes out there that he's made up with everybody, he could return soon? That's
no, I'm saying if he, right. Like, I don't think him making up with everyone and everyone knowing that he's going to come back is a good way for him to come back. And it's good for business.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. I think I'm guessing the insinuation, and you could correct me if I'm wrong here, Lee, but you're kind of hinting at maybe a Pillman angle that they're doing here.
Yes.
Where they're trying to,
he's
like,
the most,
you know,
polarizing guy in the business, then use him as the most polarizing guy in the business. I just, yeah. I can't get the timing out of my head, guys. And that's all. And you might, I'm sure you guys are right and I'm wrong. I would bet on that. But I just can't get the timing out of my head that I watched on TV that nobody showed the attacker. So what's AEW going to do now? Somebody's attacked the Young Bucks and they're going to be out for, and I heard on the broadcast, they said months, right?
Something, yeah, a while anyway.
Right. Does this not lead to 2 months from now or 3 months from now, CM Punk coming back?
Maybe. I mean, they've kind of been trying to insinuate with Don Callis. So if all of a sudden it's, you know, a backup, the backup could be Don Callis if it was going to be Punk. I mean, we've talked about it before, but if like
Don Callis,
but oh, what I mean, like, no, I'm saying Don Callis recruiting somebody, like it's all part of the mastermind of Don Callis. That's what I'm trying to say.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's like, and again, that's just as sort of a backup plan in case, like, I mean, I think we could all agree. You don't even look at like what happens behind the scene. You don't look at like, you know, reports from wrestling media or whatever. The big money match would be Kenny Omega and the Bucks versus CM Punk and FTR. I think that's the big money match.
Well, what did we discuss? What did we discuss last week though? What if the next member of
right
Blackpool Combat Club with CM Punk.
Right. That could be if you really want to establish a heel group, that would be certainly one way, because you would have to bring Punk as a heel at this point. Like, especially after the Elite's reaction when they returned and you had those bleep CM Punk chants when the Elite first returned. You would have to bring Punk back as a heel. And you know what? I'll throw some more fire to your conspiracy there, Lee.
Yeah, him and Moxley got into a pissing match about Rocky III. That's not even believable that they haven't seen the movie. Come on. Yeah. That's it. That's embarrassing, because we know that that's not true. And God. And now you just told me that Tanner Moxley's going to go on with Renee Paquette, his wife, on her podcast.
Yep.
Oh, you don't think they're going to talk about CM Punk? Of course they're going to talk about CM Punk. So I'm just saying that all of this happening in a very short amount of time is not telling me that CM Punk's going away. I guess I can't get that out of my head. Throw more fire on it, Zach, before we go.
I was just going to say, if you look back to the Eddie Kingston feud with CM Punk and you hear the words of Eddie Kingston talking about how no one wants him in the locker room anymore, he's always been a cancer. I'm paraphrasing on that one, but like, you know, nobody wants you. They never wanted you here. They're all afraid to say it. I'm not, you know, and also I forget which wrestler it was. I'm blanking, but somebody once said the real CM Punk will show himself soon. I think it may have been MJF, actually. That was like the real CM Punk.
The devil himself or whatever. Yeah,
we'll show himself soon. So they've talked about him being an enigma anyways and behind the scenes. So if this is just some lawn orchestrated work, which I don't think it's a lawn orchestrated work, I think there's definitely some most if not all shoot, you know, then that could be something that they could go back to in previous stories with Punk. So that's kind of throwing some more fire into the conspiracy theory.
If I'm Punk doing this all on social media and people thinking, like, why should we believe? So AEW films a whole segment in front of a production truck and with really poorly with cables covers up CM Punk's face. Okay. They didn't even try to cover it up.
Yep.
So we're supposed to believe that CM Punk is stupid enough and so hot-headed enough that he does things by accident, but then nobody else does. Like, AEW does everything on purpose, because this billboard doing it in front of it was absolutely on purpose. We can think that, right?
Mm-hmm.
CM Punk put something out on Instagram for 5 minutes, and we all think, oh, that guy's a hothead. But absolutely, he can do that. Like, he just never know what you're going to get with CM Punk. Come on. Like, he's the guy that's doing everything by accident and everyone else is doing things on purpose. Can't we just all go into things in wrestling and start with the framework of they did this on purpose? And then let's start discussing it. And then if they somehow didn't, okay, we'll work our way into that conversation. But this is wrestling, folks. This is not real life. And if you want to confuse the boundaries, it's what wrestling does. They try to blur the line between what's real and what's not. I just have such a difficult time thinking that everything else is always done on purpose because we got all these smart people, but basically one of the most popular guys in the history of business is just a stupid hothead that does things by accident.
Well, he's certainly a hothead. We learned that from the All Out press conference, but
no, or did we? Or no, but maybe like he gets he has gotten the bad rap for that. And certainly I'm sure is at fault.
Yes.
For some of it. But there's a lot of other people at fault for here. He's not the only person. Like, executive vice presidents came in and got in a fight with him. Oh, by the way, they're some of your biggest wrestlers in the company. In Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. But they don't have a reputation of, man, they are... Kenny Omega is this stupid hothead. Can't control his temper, man. Nobody thinks that.
Nope.
He did that. But nobody thinks that. So I refuse to believe that because
people have been hot-headed in their lives that they're not smart enough to ever do something on purpose, and they'll just be a hothead and not know what they were doing for the rest of their lives. Meanwhile, everyone else is so smart that they're pulling one over on everyone. And it's wrestling. Anyway, I've belabored this point, but AEW did all of that on purpose on Wednesday night, and then you're telling me that CM Punk was a hothead on Thursday morning. Like, I don't believe it yet. I'm sorry. I don't believe it.
That's fair. That's fair.
Just like I don't believe that you carried 174 of the first shows, but I think you were actually pretty good in them, Zach and Tanner. Your addition to this program has taken the intern label off of you and just made you a regular contributor in the program. Okay?
I'm still calling you the intern, just for the record, but you have certainly been a strong contributor to the show.
Come on. Bunda gave me a new title and everything.
What was the title that Bunda gave you?
I can't even remember.
Yeah. it was something. Tanner, I like you a lot, but if you start referencing Steve Bunda as your reference for things, it's going to go downhill. Probably going to go downhill real quick. Awesome stuff, Tanner. Thank you so much for your time. Zach, been great. We're going to have another edition with some of our regulars, and we're going to go through some of the WrestleMania predictions. Tanner, we'll get yours and add them into the program for the rest of the card, because we're looking forward to WrestleMania week. But this has been a lot of fun, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, this is great. And thank you for coming on, Tanner, with the C4 review and just kind of joining along and talking with us. This is a lot of fun. I thought this was fantastic.
Yeah, always a pleasure, guys. Glad to come on at any time.
Never a chore. That's what my friend always used. Always a pleasure, Lee. Never a chore. But you knew it was a chore, right? It's like, man, you were so close to saying something nice, just like I was about Zach. But I won't be able to, because we're out of time. Thanks again for listening to another edition of This Is Wrestling.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of TSN Wrestling. Join us again next week for another hour of your favorite wrestling all-stars.